the Deep Dive, where we sift through articles, research, and insights to bring you the essential knowledge you need to be truly well-informed. Today, we're diving deep into the electrifying world of Anthony Bourdain and his groundbreaking memoir, Kitchen Confidential: Adventures in the Culinary Underbelly. You might think you know Anthony Bourdain, right? The global traveler, the culinary anthropologist, the guy who ate everything everywhere.
Yes.
But before all that, there was the chef, a struggling line cook who basically blew the doors off professional kitchens, revealing a world nobody outside truly understood. So our mission for this deep dive is to go beyond that celebrity persona, you know, explore the raw, real-world Bourdain exposed and the profound, often kind of messy, lessons from his really unconventional life. We've pulled from his memoir, interviews, and deeper analyses of his huge cultural impact.
And it's so vital to understand, Kitchen Confidential wasn't just another book. It was like a seismic event in food writing. It definitely propelled Bourdain from, you know, relative obscurity to global fame. Yeah. But its real significance, it lies in how it gave this stark, authentic voice to millions of invisible kitchen workers. What really stands out is how it dared to expose the industry's dark secrets, the casual cruelty, the drug use, the sheer physical and mental grind, while also somehow celebrating the brutal artistry and like the primal satisfaction of professional cooking. It didn't just talk about food. It sort of elevated food writing to legitimate social commentary, made it relevant way beyond just the plate.
So if we trace this icon's journey back, this rebel chef, where exactly did he begin? He grew up in comfortable suburbs, Leonia, New Jersey, born to a classical music exec dad and a New York Times editor mom. And that intellectually rich middle-class upbringing creates such a fascinating tension, doesn't it? With the gritty, often rebellious choices he made later on.
Totally.
But his real culinary awakening, I'd argue, happened on a family trip to France. He was just 10. He talks about it in Kitchen Confidential, this pivotal moment on a fishing boat being served his very first raw oyster.
Oh yeah, that oyster story is legendary.
He described it with this intensity, almost like a religious conversion, that briny, metallic taste connecting him right to the ocean, to a food experience that was profound, not just, you know, sustenance.
Became his North Star, as he put it.
Exactly. And even in his restless adolescence, he was drawn to counterculture writers. Burroughs, Hunter S. Thompson, really foreshadowing that unique, unfiltered voice that would just explode later.
And what's so remarkable about that one oyster experience is how it went beyond just taste, right?
Yeah.
It represented this fundamental shift towards authenticity, an uncompromising relationship with food.
Yeah.
That defined his whole approach to life, to cooking, everything.
So instead of like the college track.
Right. So his decision to go to the Culinary Institute of America, the CIA, up in Hyde Park, New York, it was really an escape route, getting away from suburban conformity.
Yeah.
And the CIA back then, late 70s, it was a far cry from today's, you know, glossy image. People described it as a trade school for misfits, dropouts, ex-cons, folks looking for solid work. That environment shaped him massively. He learned classic French techniques, sure, but alongside the harsh realities of kitchen culture, the casual cruelty, the dark humor, the constant physical and mental pressure.
And that led into his wilderness years.
Yeah, bouncing around various New York City kitchens, a period that tragically included a two-decade battle with heroin addiction, which he was brutally open about, saying it was distressingly integrated into kitchen culture. He was unflinchingly honest about learning to function while high, which just speaks volumes about his commitment to raw truth-telling, even when it was ugly.
So after 2 decades in the trenches, battling those demons, honing his craft, how did he finally break through? And what kind of philosophy, you know, really came out of all that chaos?
Well, he found some stability in his early 40s at Brasserie Les Halles, became executive chef there. It wasn't like a fancy Michelin star place, but it was solid. It gave him the footing to get clean and really lock down his culinary voice. You know, unpretentious French bistro cooking done precisely with respect for tradition.
And that's when the writing started.
Yeah, exactly. Started writing initially just to make some extra cash. And this is where that distinct voice, profane, honest, unafraid, really took shape. The voice that eventually just ignited with his New Yorker article, Don't Eat Before Reading This, and then boom, Kitchen Confidential.
Right.
And if you connect that to the bigger picture, Bourdain's entire worldview, like his core being, was fundamentally shaped by those kitchen years. He came to believe deeply that authenticity just crushes pretension every time. And that sheer hard work and competence.
Yeah.
That matters infinitely more than your credentials or where you came from.
The mise en place idea, too.
Oh, absolutely central. Mise en place. Not just the kitchen setup, having everything in place. It became this powerful life metaphor for him. Preparation, meticulous respect for the process, unwavering attention to detail in everything. And he loved that pirate ship mentality of kitchens, a refuge for society's misfits, right? Where respect was earned purely by your skill and your grit.
Not by who you knew.
Exactly. His motivations were always pretty clear. Give voice to the invisible workers, tear apart that romanticized restaurant fantasy people had, and later, using food as this incredible cultural bridge for understanding. His approach to adversity, forged in the kitchen heat and addiction struggles. It was about compartmentalizing pain, finding meaning through just relentless work, and embracing discomfort for growth. He saw recovery as this continuous, brutally honest process, you know, not some final perfect state you arrive at.
Yeah, that really comes through. And what I found just absolutely fascinating, maybe a little terrifying, diving back into Kitchen Confidential were those insider secrets. They totally change how you think about eating out. He made it almost like a consumer guide for the wary diner.
Oh yeah, the practical tips for gold.
Like the famous, never order fish on Mondays because fish markets are often closed weekends. So simple, but who thought of that?
Right. Or brunch being the culinary graveyard for leftovers. Genius, but horrifying.
Totally. And the warnings about bulk-made hollandaise. Potential bacteria trap, if not handled perfectly.
And the leftover bread. Maybe ignorance is bliss on that one.
Probably. And declaring ordering steak well done a culinary sin, saying you'd likely get a lesser cut, treated with disdain by the chef. Brutal honesty.
He really laid it all bare.
And he detailed that whole kitchen hierarchy, the quasi-military brigade system, that formal chain of command, plus the pirate crew ethos, the misfits, the slang, the unspoken rules, the intense bonds formed under fire. It sounds incredible.
But, you know, those revelations weren't just for shock value. Which raises the question, why did he feel it was so vital to expose those uncomfortable truths? It was fundamentally about demystifying fine dining, sure, but also fostering a much deeper appreciation for the intense, often brutal, labor involved.
That makes sense.
And he had this deep, abiding respect for the unsung heroes of the kitchen. He consistently praised immigrant line cooks, Mexican, Ecuadorian, Salvadoran especially, called them the true backbone of American restaurants. Mm-hmm. Punctual, hardworking, incredibly skilled, loyal.
He really championed them.
Absolutely. And the dishwasher. He didn't just mention them. He called the dishwasher the sump pump and the beating heart of the kitchen. Believe their morale was like a direct barometer for the whole restaurant's health. It's not just reporting. It's this powerful championing of the dignity of hard, unglamorous work. And it perfectly illustrates that duality of brutality and beauty in the kitchen he talked about. The physical punishment, the low pay, the stress, substance abuse, contrasted so sharply with the profound satisfaction of a perfect service, like this high-stakes ballet amidst total chaos.
He definitely shone a light on their incredible contribution and that almost mythic kitchen culture. But do you think maybe at times his really raw portrayal of it all, including the drug use, might have accidentally reinforced some of the industry's less savory stereotypes, even while he was trying to be honest?
That's a really perceptive question. I mean, his honesty was his superpower,
yes,
right? And his aim was definitely to show the truth, not to glorify it. But yeah, you can argue that some of the more sensational aspects might be misconstrued by some people. Still, I think Bourdain's intent was always crystal clear. Reveal the reality, not to sugarcoat it, not to condemn it, but to understand the forces actually at play in that environment. And by doing that, he just made it impossible to ignore the systemic issues and the often overlooked humanity within it all.
Yeah, that rings true. His life was undeniably just this series of dramatic highs and lows. But certain moments really stand out as these huge turning points, right? Things that dramatically altered his path.
Definitely.
That raw oyster in France at age 10, you can't overstate it. His culinary awakening, that first deep dive into authentic, primal food.
The seed was planted right there.
And then enrolling at the CIA at 19. That was a clear rejection of convention, pushing him towards working class values, exposing him to this really diverse world he might not have otherwise seen.
A deliberate choice to go against the grain.
And it's just remarkable how his heroin years, as destructive as they clearly were from his 20s to mid-40s, they almost seem to embed him deeper into that working class reality he later championed. It feels like it shaped his empathy in a really unique way. Wouldn't you agree? That period, despite its darkness, was strangely formative.
Absolutely. I think crucible is the right word for each of those moments. They weren't just things that happened to him. They actively refined him. They shaped his perspective on food, on humanity, on authenticity in a way that was just utterly unique to him.
Yeah.
The oyster planted that seed, like you said. Culinary school built the technical foundation and exposed him to the raw human side of kitchens. Addiction, while devastating, undeniably taught him empathy and grit. Kept him rooted in that working class reality, functioning in like survival mode.
And then getting clean.
Right. Then sobriety, combined with the stability of the executive chef role at Les Halles around age 42, that finally allowed him to focus, to channel all that intelligence and experience into his craft and then into his writing. And the book, Kitchen Confidential, that just gave him the stage. It transformed him overnight into a public figure at 44. And he immediately started using that new platform to advocate for the kitchen culture he knew so intimately.
So as we kind of reflect on his journey, what's the lasting impact of this man, this book? He left behind such a massive legacy, but it's one touched by both incredible triumph and profound tragedy.
His legacy is truly multifaceted, and it really continues to resonate today, I think, professionally. He utterly revolutionized food writing and television. Shows like No Reservations, Parts Unknown, they proved beyond any doubt that food could be a vehicle for deep social, political, cultural exploration.
Yeah.
Way beyond just recipes or restaurant reviews.
He made food about everything else.
Exactly. And he consistently advocated for kitchen workers, giving a powerful voice to unseen labor, culturally, societally. He humanized food service. He fostered this nuanced understanding of global cultures just through sharing meals. Mm-hmm. And he used his platform for critical social justice issues, famously supporting hashtag MeToo, advocating passionately for immigrant workers' rights. He wasn't afraid to speak up.
No, he wasn't.
And then on a deeply human level, his personal story of recovery, of reinvention, it inspired countless people. It offered this model of just raw honesty about addiction, about depression. But of course, his death by suicide in 2018 cast this profound shadow.
Yeah.
It served as this stark, really painful reminder that outward success, visibility, they don't necessarily heal deeper internal wounds.
Yeah.
And that the same acute sensitivity that made him such a compelling observer of human nature also perhaps made him vulnerable to its darker aspects. His passing definitely sparked crucial overdue conversations about mental health, especially among people who seem to, you know, have it all together.
Anthony Bourdain's life offers so many rich, sometimes uncomfortable insights, not just for chefs or writers, right? But for all of us just trying to navigate this complex world. When I think of his journey, I always recall that quote, "Your body is not a temple, it's an amusement park. Enjoy the ride."
Classic Bourdain.
And for him, that wasn't just about indulgence, was it? It was like a philosophy he lived with, this visceral intensity. It meant not just tasting the exotic, but confronting the ugly truths, enduring the chaos, finding meaning within the ride itself, not just watching from the sidelines.
Fully engaging.
Or his thought, travel changes you. Life and travel leaves marks on you. That speaks to his radical embrace of authentic engagement with the world, not just tourism.
Getting your hands dirty. Metaphorically and literally.
And a very relatable one. I understand there's a guy inside me who wants to lay in bed. My whole life is a series of stratagems to avoid and outwit that guy.
Yeah. The daily battle.
That's his candid testament to ongoing gritty self-discipline, isn't it? That relentless push against complacency. His life, really, it teaches us about prioritizing authenticity over just appearance, embracing discomfort for real growth, seeing work as a path to redemption sometimes, honoring invisible labor, and understanding recovery as this continuous, often messy process, not some neat final destination.
And those insights from Bourdain are just incredibly relevant today. What really strikes me is the challenge he kind of throws down to us, to you, the listener. Are you pursuing substance or just appearance in your own life? Are you truly honoring the people doing the essential, often invisible work that makes your life possible?
That's a powerful question.
And from a professional, even leadership perspective, Bourdain embodied that idea that you earn respect through sheer competence, through genuine contribution, not just your title or your image. Effective teams, like a kitchen brigade, they need that shared commitment, mutual support under pressure, a deep understanding of everyone's role. And ultimately, he showed that real quality, whether it's in food or life, comes from mastering the fundamentals before you can really innovate or break the rules effectively. His story matters more than ever, I think, in this age of carefully curated public personas, constant social media performance. His brutal honesty is such a potent counterexample. And his relentless exploration of working class experience, of immigrant labor. It remains deeply relevant for understanding economic inequality and the often overlooked dignity of service work in our society today.
Anthony Bourdain's deep dive into the culinary underbelly ultimately became this incredible celebration of passion, of grit, and the profound, unexpected connections we make around a table. His example really shows how shared meals and just a genuine curiosity about other people's experiences can forge understanding across seemingly impossible divides. His legacy reminds us that everyone has a story worth telling, and that the most profound connections often happen not in formal settings, but around simple tables, where food becomes this bridge between strangers who might just discover they're not so different after all. So what will you discover when you choose curiosity over judgment in your next meal, or maybe just your next conversation?